Should we let our kids fail? Find out today at the Catholic Dad Show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Catholic Dad Show. My name's Chris.
And my name's Matt, and we're just a couple of Catholic dads trying to do the best job we can following the Lord in our fatherhood and share whatever we have with you guys.
We believe that Catholic fatherhood can and is changing the world, so let's dive in.
All right, so I'm wearing this shirt on purpose. This is my fancy Benedictine College dad shirt. So this past weekend, my family and I got to go visit my son, who's now at Benedictine College, because it was family weekend or whatever. And so we did take all the kids again, hoping that it would be a good weekend with all the kids and fit for young ones. And it was. It was a great weekend. We got a VRBO and ended up having our college son actually stay with us in the VRBO. And it was really cool because the first night it was just like normal, like family. He's playing video games in the other room and we're watching TV, which my wife leaned over to me and said, "I love this." You know, just the fact that it felt like normal.
Familiar.
Like, yeah, familiar. Just hearing Levi yelling at his friends while they're playing Fortnite or whatever. No, they're playing that other one. The blobs running around. What's the name of that one? Do you know what I'm talking about? You're like this floppy blob running a race. Fall Guys.
Fall Guys.
Is that what it is? Fall Guys. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And then the next night we played, you know, some card games together. But the weekend started out epically. So my second oldest son, who's 16, he's gotten into longboarding and has for some time. His friend Ryan, basically he found a board in the trash, in his neighbor's trash, and he gave it to my son. So my son's been, you know, skating on this, or longboarding on this like
garbage
trash board.
Yeah.
This trash board for a long time. And so he's like, "I can't, like, I wish it," the first time we went to Benedictine with him, he's like, "Man, I wish I would have brought my longboard." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, if we come again, you can bring it, but be careful because you're not around hills like this in Texas."
Yeah.
You're not used to this. So start off slow and make sure you pay attention to where you're going and stuff like that. And we get there and apparently he had forgotten that advice. So the first thing he does is if you're familiar with Benedictine at all, up by the Abbey is relatively close to the highest point of campus. And he starts there. He puts the board on the road and just starts going.
Well, there's no working up. He turns it to 10 right off the bat.
Yes. He doesn't even think about it, you know, because you don't really realize just how much momentum you can get when you're on wheels on a hill. Anyway, so we're all just walking down the hill up on the sidewalk or whatever. And Levi's in his dorm and is going to meet us there. And so Asher just starts. And he starts skating. And within 100 yards, I can already tell he's in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like, the speed wobble is already starting. Like, that
100
back truck.
Feet probably, not even 100 yards.
I mean, that back truck starts to shimmy. And I'm like, "Oh, no." I'm like, "Wesley, like, he's going way too fast." And she's like, "You think he'll be okay?" I was like, "We'll see." You know? And so he goes and he gets out of sight of us. Like, because we're like, going down the hill and the road goes a different path. So as we crest the hill, we look down and we just see a crowd of people surrounding someone who's laying on the ground in the middle of the road.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, "Wesley, that's Asher." And she's like, "What? Asher's on the ground." And she's like, "Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "No, he crashed." And she's like, "I'm going to go." I'm like, "Yeah, you need to go. Like, you're the doctor."
She is, yes. Like,
"I will stay here and wrangle the kids and keep the kids away in case Asher's really hurt. I don't want them to get scared and I don't want them to be in the way."
Of course, you're saying it at this cadence, like, "Just in case, sweetheart." You were like, "Yeah. I'll watch the kids. You go to the hen."
Oh yeah, that's how it was. And all the stuff in my mind, like that quick, like, strategic decision was just instant. I knew exactly what needed to be done. I sent her. I was going to take care of the kids. We didn't even have to communicate that, really. It was just understood.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Hey guys, Asher crashed. Let's pray a quick Hail Mary for him." And so we did. You know, we all prayed a quick Hail Mary.
Good.
And like at this point, it doesn't matter where you are in campus. Everyone around this hill that's looking into this valley is staring at my son on the ground.
This bloody stump.
And he hasn't moved yet. And I'm like, "Oh no, like, how bad is this? Is he just resting, gathering himself before he stands up or whatever?"
Maybe it was the Hail Mary and he was resting in the spirit.
He might have been. That's right. So I finally make it down there and at this point he's standing up and Wes, he had gotten there and said, "You know, this is my son." You know, like, everybody was like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" Well, like he was okay. Like he didn't break any bones. He didn't get a concussion or anything like that, which is miraculous because he was going at least 20, 25 miles an hour. And there's this grate in the middle of the road that is a drainage grate, you know, so it just catches all the water that comes down the hill and obviously takes it away.
And the ashes.
And he didn't pay, like, again, he didn't plan his route at all. He didn't look at what he was going to be dealing with. And he hit the grate and he was gone. Like he wiped out. Luckily he was wearing a hoodie and he was wearing, jeans, and his jeans had like asphalt burns on them. his hoodie luckily didn't have holes, but like his skin on the inside had like fabric ground into his skin.
Road rash from the cotton. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he was mad because like, this is my favorite hoodie, or I just got this hoodie. I never even worn it. And these are my favorite jeans. Anyway, but when he stood up and I looked at him, he was pale. I was like, dude, are you okay? Because you're pale. Like, do you need to sit down or whatever? And Wes checked him out and he was fine. Levi was like right there as Asher slid into first. And Levi looks down. He's like, man, what's this college kid doing? Like, what happened to this college kid? And he looks down. He's like, oh, that's my brother. And then he walks up to Asher. He's like, Asher, great entrance. So anyway, everything was fine. Like he got some bumps and bruises and everything like that. But the reason I bring that up is it's just one of those instances of I could have bubble protected him. I could have said, no, you're not bringing the longboard.
You could have helicopter parented that.
Yeah. I could have said, no, you're not doing this. No, you're not doing that. No, like stop right there. You take it to a lower hill and you do it. But I didn't, you know, we let it happen. And it may have been a mistake because if he had broken something, it would have ended his, you know, gymnastics season. Mm-hmm. Like this whole season would have been trashed if he had broken a wrist or his arm or anything like that. But praise God that didn't happen. He just got some bumps and bruises. But that's one of the things as a dad, as a father, as a parent, like we have those decisions to make probably daily about whether or not we're going to let our kids experience pain. Experience failure. I think that's what I'll talk about today is like, what does that feel like when you do that? And why should we allow, you know, moderate failures in our kids' lives?
But why should we consider colossal failures to permit them as well? Right. We're not going to be there when they're in their 20s.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this. If we don't allow failures whatsoever, we absolutely are going to be there in their 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to be living in our house asking us, should I do this or should I do that? With a complete lack of security and a lack of identity, right?
Or they're going to make ridiculous mistakes because they never made small mistakes. And that's like, so a colossal failure, like when, like, and this is an extreme, you know, but if like my family has guns, we hunt, stuff like that. If my son starts cleaning the gun with it facing his face, that is a colossal failure that I will not allow to happen.
Right.
I'm going to stop that immediately. And before it even happens, I'm not going to allow that.
Right.
Now in other instances, you know, not involving firearms, like the skateboarding thing, I'm going to allow stuff like that. That are going to be moderate failures for them to learn, oh, when this happens, I get hurt. Even yesterday, I was throwing the football with my youngest son, who's just turned 8. And we're throwing the ball back and forth. And then he decides to pick up a couple of acorns. You know, so as he throws the ball to me, he picks up an acorn and smacks it with his hand. And then he sees me throwing the ball back to him. And in his mind, he thinks he can throw another acorn and smack it with his hand. Well, he throws up the acorn, focuses it on the acorn, and then he looks up as the ball hits him in the eye. It's like, so that was just another like failure, you know, that my son gets to learn. It happens a little faster than you think it does. Anyway, so.
Both of your sons learn that same lesson in a week. It happens a little faster than you think it does. So here's the deal. And it's not just with sons, it's with daughters as well. I think it's actually a little bit different with daughters.
Oh yeah.
We want to protect our daughters.
Yes.
And we're actually called to protect and provide for both of our children. And I think this is where the tension exists. Protecting them from failure whatsoever is not providing them growth opportunities.
Yep.
Amen. Right. Failure is one of the greatest teachers.
Yes.
Also, also pretty mean. Like failure is a bit of a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
But it's one of the greatest teachers. And I want my children to be exposed to that. Because yeah. those lessons, like, oh, I just spent $5 on this plastic toy and it broke in 2 seconds. Yeah. And I've said to my kids, I was like, actually, you didn't. You spent $5 on this plastic toy and you learned that cheap plastic toys break easily. So now yeah. you know to save up for the, you know, the better toy in the future. And my oldest is like, Dad, you're so wise. And my youngest is like, why didn't you stop me? I'm like, I'm not going to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. just be prudent. Think, is this a decision you want to make? Like, I do that. I sometimes yep. say, are you sure you want to do this? And make them own their decision process. Because one thing that we have to remember is that for adolescent children and below, their frontal lobe is not fully developed.
Yeah.
This is the decision-making cortex of the brain.
Yep.
To where it's like when your son did a stupid thing going down that hill, like part of it is because he doesn't have the same sort of reasoning capability as you do.
Yep.
But yep. he's not going to develop that without some sort of formation.
Yeah.
And that asphalt scraping into his bones yeah. is a type of formation that is more effective than you being like, wait, please don't.
Yeah.
You know, because then he's just gonna be like, my dad's a jerk. It's yeah. like, no, actually, there was wisdom there, but wisdom is earned better than it is learned.
Yes. Well, better than it's, I guess, taught. I mean, we still like, we yeah, learn wisdom, taught. You know, through actions, you know, but I think that you can't teach someone wisdom, you know, and there is wisdom that you gain through experience.
Yeah.
You know, and those are learning experiences, like you're learning it, you know, and, but yeah, it's hard, you know, as a parent to do that, to allow those things. And this is something that we do here at Ablaze, even with our missionaries, you know, same sort of thing. You know, we want them to learn. We want them to have freedom to innovate and to try new things. We want our kids, like as a father, I want my kids to have the freedom to innovate and try new things. And even when I know it's going to fail, when I know it's not going to work, I allow it, you know, to happen so that they'll gain like that wisdom, that experience. And then the next time that they have that same, I don't know, desire or that opportunity, they'll think twice, you know, about what they should do.
Right. Right.
But
so I'm a huge fan of this guy online, kind of this little motivational marketing speaker guy or whatever. His name's Gary Vee, and he is passionate about failure being the most important lesson. Uh-huh. In fact, he said, that's what your 20s are for.
Yeah.
And he uses colorful language, so I won't. but he's like, your 20s are literally for messing things up and learning how the world works. So in your 30s, you can try things out and still fail. So then in your 40s and 50s, you can smash. You can just yeah. kill it, right? Yeah. And I really believe that that a lot of our children in society today are being raised with like padded gloves or bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, I think that's a first world problem. Like I really yes, do. Like,
I agree.
I'm picking you up from school instead of you riding your bike home because I'm nervous that in the 2 mile ride, something bad might happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's a first world problem. In other countries, it's like mom and dad are both working. You got to yep. find your way home, but you also got to fill up a jug of water and bring it with yeah. you while you come. And oh yeah, if you see a beast, you set down the jug and you fight the beast. Right. Yeah. Like I'm 7. It's like, welcome to the tribe, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think that we need to keep that in mind. But there are some things that I think are totally like, you should have internet filters in your home.
Yes.
You should. Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you want to foster responsible use of technology. So what does that look like? Right. Your yeah. kids throwing stuff at each other like a ball and then they grab something else. Like that might injure someone else. And so that might require some stepping in, but it might not. They might agree to light the tennis ball on fire and see how many times they can throw it back and forth. And if both of them are party to it, maybe, just maybe, you know, but then if it goes into the neighbor's shed and the neighbor's house is now on fire, like what's the balance here? Because I know that there's balance, like measured failure is so good. Organic failure is so good. But now my neighbor's house is on fire and I'm a bad parent. Like there is like, so Matt, how do you do that? How do you reconcile yep. that reality?
I don't, like, for me, it's just gut, you know, very often, you know, I don't know if I've been in an instance like that where someone else's property might be damaged. I'm trying to think. Like, yeah, I mean, yesterday was a stupid thing, you know, but while we were throwing the football, you know, Isaac's like, I want to throw it at that car that was driving by. And I'm like, no. And I think he was just being silly,
right?
You know, but he's like, but I want them to catch it. I'm like, they're driving in a car. They're not going to catch it.
Right.
You know, so that's one that like, and it's probably not the best example, but I think he was just being silly. But that's something like that would be something that I would stop. Either where like it might potentially cause a serious altercation or whatever. But yeah, I don't have a solid example in mind about what would keep me from doing it. But like for me, most of the time it's gut. Like when I can tell that the repercussions are going to be severe, it's something that will stop. So like it happens in our car fairly often, you know, especially in the van, because the kids are tall enough or the van's tall enough that they can walk around in the van. They'll unbuckle and they'll walk around in the van, you know, and that's something that we're pretty harsh with them about. Mom and dad will allow it in some instances when we need help. So we'll break the rules when we need them to grab Gianna's pacifier or something.
You'll break the law.
That's right. We're breaking the law. But then they take it on themselves to take it off. And so sometimes to teach that lesson, I'll just push the brakes a little harder. And they will fall on their face and yeah. hurt themselves.
Yeah.
And then they're like, Dad, what happened? I'm like, I just had to stop real quick. What happened to you? Well, I was unbuckled. Well, that's what happens when you're not buckled up. You get hurt.
Yeah.
But that's a colossal failure that I don't want to allow them to have. Like in one time, one of our kids, like I was parking to reverse. You know, I just like stopped to get into reverse to park. And my kid opened the van door. Like, yelled at them, you know, because yeah, the door's now open while we're moving.
Yeah.
This is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, how do you tell, Chris? Like, how do you make that, like, those judgment calls?
When there's curiosity involved, I almost always find a way for the kids to execute on that, even if it's going to lead to failure. And so I don't want my kids to maim themselves or others, right? I don't mind yep. if my kids are like, it's going to hurt a little bit. Right. So there's a balance there. So I give my kids pocket knives when they turn 5 years old, but yep. I give it to them with a big lesson about here's the blood zone. Here's how you, when you're whittling or something like that. And they start with a bar of soap, like just an ivory bar of soap. And they practice carving and utilizing the knife and things like that. And the kids ended up just enjoying the scissors, the little scissors on the pocket knife. Uh-huh. And then we put them away out of reach because we have younger kids in the home sure. as well. But my kids sometimes grab the knife and like, is anyone in my blood zone? And so now they have the blade sticking out and they're swinging their arm because it's the blood zone is anywhere it could be. And I'm like, no. Like, that's not how you test your blood zone, by swinging a knife around.
You check to see by if you looking, find some blood.
Like looking around, is anyone in my arm's reach? And if no, then there's no one in my blood zone. You don't actually try and create a blood zone, right? But another way that kind of we look, and this is something fair to ask you as well, but we don't expect a 4.0 from our kids.
Yeah.
Like we don't expect perfection. We expect effort. And we also expect, like, if you're very passionate about one subject and you want to put extra time into that subject and another subject, you just want to kind of cash in and just do the minimum. Mm-hmm. Like we're okay with that. We expect a 3.5.
Yeah.
And so if you want to get all A's and a C, because there's just one class that you're like, I don't care, but you're going to kill it at all of the others. That's fine. But A's and B's. So we do expect greatness out of our children.
Yeah. Yeah.
But expecting greatness versus expecting perfection yeah. is a distinction that's important, because the kids in the world today have the highest level of anxieties that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Right. Generation Z, which is the generation of our children, are called the loneliest generation, mental health issues, all that stuff. And I think that some of them are literally paralyzed to make a mistake.
Yeah.
And perfection is the enemy of the good. And I want my children to know, like, it's okay to not be excellent at all the things. Yeah. It's not okay to be mediocre at all the things.
Yeah. And that's like, that's another area where I like allowing failure is hard, especially as competitive as college is, as your kids get older. So A's and B's is what we expect of our kids. And right. we definitely have different thresholds for different kids. And like, I think that probably goes as, you know, something for this whole podcast, this whole episode, is that, you know, some of your kids are going to be more sensitive than others. And so their threshold for pain and what's catastrophic to them is going to be different. You mentioned, you know, your girls, you know, my girls are more sensitive than my boys, especially to pain and different things like that. And so I won't allow them. And when
you
say
pain, you mean physical and emotional?
Both. Yes, yeah. Both. And so I won't allow them to experience as heavy of a situation as I will others. And my boys are the same way. Like each of them are different. Like they're all different. And so you're going to have different thresholds for different kids. What one kid was able to recover from is going to be totally different than what another kid is going to be able to recover from. What we don't want to do is create wounds,
right,
that they're going to carry with, you know, for the rest of their lives. You know, that's the whole protection, you know, providing protection, like we're protecting from wounds. And so when we're talking about catastrophic failures, that's what we're talking about. You know, whether it's physical or emotional, we're protecting from those wounds that are going to be with them for some time.
Right.
But the, yeah, as far as the grades and the school goes, it's hard because what I would consider all the way up through junior high is experiment time. Like that's when you're working with little failures here and there, you know, letting them, you know, make a D, you know, whatever. And then having natural consequences. Well, having consequences that I've created, you know, and those are the learning moments. Those are the small failures that we allow them to experience, whether it's no screen time or no, like you're grounded or whatever. Those are the other types of failures that we allow them to have. But when they get into high school, like it's, if you haven't taught them that by that point where they're self-sufficient, I feel like you're hosed as a parent, you know, because
you either have to step in and helicopter a little bit,
yep,
which I don't think is healthy.
Yep.
Cause our job is not to force our kids to be successful.
Yeah.
Our job is to support our kids into success.
Yeah.
And there's a slight difference in the even some of the actions can be the same, but the intention behind the actions is important. So, yes, things do get, but I'm gonna let you know, Matt, like if my kids don't get into college, like that's not failure. There is still a pathway for success for people who don't go to college. I honestly think, there's plenty of pathways to success. And I think sometimes the world defines success in a way that leads to a perfectionist mentality.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that, before we go any further, I don't want to forget this, but if you're still watching this video, you obviously like it. So like this video right now. And if this is the second video, like at least the second video of the Catholic Dad Show, subscribe. We need to get these numbers up so that more people see this. All right. Back to the topic. With regards to grades and stuff like that, if I know what my child is capable of and what they desire, I want to keep them away from, or I want to try to guide them towards like not having that catastrophic failure. So if my kid wants to be like on the gymnastics team at a college that has a gymnastics team.
Right.
One of my kids does. And we, you know, so we work with him on, you know, finding weight training, all these other things. But then I also had a conversation with him about grades, you know, because if he wants to walk on to a college, like there aren't any NCAA gymnastics teams in Texas. They're out of state. So if he wants to walk on somewhere, that means out of state tuition. And so what I've told him is like, if you want to walk on, you've got to have good grades because your mom and I can't pay out of state tuition.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, you either need to move to that state now and start living with your cousins or, you know, to establish residency or you need to kick tail, you know, in your grades. Because you could get significant scholarships through grades. And so, but those are things that like trying to set them up for success and reminding them of the goal that they are looking for.
Right.
And that's part of the parent, you know, is like, this is the goal that you have set. You know, you will not achieve that goal by doing what you're currently doing.
And again, the way that you did that, Matt, just to use that as an example, is you didn't make the decision for them. Mm. You just narrowed the options. Yeah. And I think that's where protection comes in, is we might be able to narrow the options. Hey, yeah. You see that big hill? That one runs directly into the street. Yeah. So you can go find a big hill, but it just can't run directly into the street.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. So you've just narrowed my options, and that's okay. You can still be stupid. Just don't be mortally stupid, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're getting close to the end of this one, Chris. Like, anything else that, like, on this topic that you wanted to make sure and talk about?
Yeah. I just want to emphasize, like, that there's a tendency and a tension between boys and girls, but also husbands and wives. Mm. How could you let the boys do that? How could you let the girls do that? Yes. Why didn't you do something to stop them? And so I think a unified front of parenting, like, I don't want my child to come home and be like, oh, I failed. And then, yeah, you totally messed up. Instead, to be able to reframe it and say, what did you learn here, right? But that mentality and that approach has to be unified, because if mom is like, oh, what a good opportunity for learning, right? This is you mm-hmm. spinning it, you know? And the dad is like, you failed me and I'm mad. That's a wound. Yes. Like, I can look back in my own memory and still taste the shame of those moments where I failed and was shamed for failing in my rearing as a child. And so we really have to, as a husband and a wife, come together and say, we're going to make sure that we shape things as lessons as opposed to as failures. Because if you think that a child messing up is a shock, then you failed along the way. Like, that their kids are kids, man. And kids are kids all the way into their mid-20s. You know what I mean? Yes. I still mess up, right? And so it's like, how do we as a unified front be able to say the same thing, even if one is more nurturing and the other is more like, well, let's see how we're going to navigate this next time. Whereas my wife is like, let's stop the bleeding first, you know, or whatever.
Did you just insinuate that you were 20?
No.
You said all the way into their 20s, I still make mistakes. I think like, you're not 20s. You're not in your 20s anymore, Chris.
I'm not in my 30s anymore either. So there's that.
I interrupted your train of thought.
But all the way into my age now, like, it took me a while to embrace failure. I mean, you and I working together, I have the freedom to make mistakes.
Yep.
I don't, in my job, have the freedom to not learn from them.
Yeah.
And so there have been a couple of things that we've bet big on that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But it shaped the next step forward, and it was a blessing. Looking back, it's a blessing. But I can't be reckless. So what does that look like in regards to fostering a learner's mentality, and how experimentation and failure are welcome in the Bartlett home, in the Rice home, in your home, right? Yeah.
And this even relates to, like, our prayer life, you know, and the things God calls us to. It's interesting because I get in my own head sometimes and talk myself out of things that I feel like God's calling me to. I was in the parish office just a couple days ago, and the receptionist mentioned something about her shoulder hurting. She's been in real pain, and I didn't stop and pray for her right then and there.
Right.
It's funny because, like, my excuse was that, you know, I asked God, do you want me to pray for her right now? Give me a sign, give me an image or whatever to tell me that it's time for me to pray for her right now. And I didn't get that or whatever. And I walked away, and then I got some pretty significant confirmations later that I should have. So I went back, and she actually left the office because she was in so much pain. Uh-huh. You know, she went home. And so then this morning I was like, is she there? Because I'm going. And I went and I prayed, you know, and that's a failure, you know, to respond to that. And that there's a risk there, you know, and I think that in our lives, that God is going to call us to things like this, to put ourselves out there, to risk failure, you know, to risk, you know, well, what are they going to think of me? You know, is healing not going to happen? And what's going to happen there? And different things like that. That keep us from doing that. So we even need to not be afraid of failure in our prayer life and different things God's calling us to, because there is a risk of that, you know, every single time, you know. And if there's not, then in my mind, you're not doing big enough stuff, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
anyway, we're getting off on a different topic now.
No, but another way to say this, and I think it's important for our kids. I Michael Jordan has missed more shots than I have. I mean, just and then you have, like, sit with that. Michael Jordan has lost more games than I have, But that's because he's played more than I have.
Yep.
And so failure were the guideposts along the way to excellence.
Yep.
And so don't be afraid to foster excellence in your children by allowing failure. And at the same time, that protector provider somewhere in there is where it's like, I'm not going to let them clean the barrel of a gun facing their face. So, I mean, we're not dogging on parenting, but sometimes our parenting needs to be more teachable moments as opposed to more protective moments.
Yep. So. And I do have one other thing just to piggyback on what you were saying. Conversations with your spouse about like limits and or what you're doing and motivations are good, you know, beforehand, not just afterwards.
Just so you can support each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You know, just so your wife or your husband knows why you're doing certain things, you know, and you can say, hey, like, and this merits a conversation with your spouse, like in the way that you parent, you know, I want to start allowing our kids to fail. You know, I want to start allowing them to make mistakes so that they can learn from them.
Yeah.
And you know, and so when I do that, you know, when we do that, you know, it may be hard for you, like other parent that may be more nurturing, whether it's the mother or father, right. may want to protect more. You're going to have to step back a little bit and let that happen, you know, or how do I help you, you know, let that happen. Different things like that. And then bigger ones, it will be conversations potentially. Hey, you know, so-and-so wants to do this. What do you think? You know, oh, well, it could go wrong in this way and this way and that way, but then they would learn this. Yeah, and it could be conversations. But I think those, like getting on that united front and understanding how you guys want a parent is essential in this.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining us. We gave
some of the
best
stuff at the end. Like, I really hope people stay and watch the whole thing.
Well, if they did, they get to hear you say that. So,
that's
hey guys,
right.
Thanks so much for joining us here at the Catholic Dad Show. Again, we believe that Catholic fatherhood can and will transform the world. So we want to encourage you guys to go out and even if you mess up, like it's not just, this isn't, failure isn't just for our kids. Failure is for us too. Let's learn and grow as Catholic fathers. Thanks for joining us.
Amen. God bless.